I am, I blurt. He holds the power. He's made that perfectly clear. You are. He smiles and I frown. You're the one with the power, baby. But you always insist it's you who holds the power. He shrugs. I like you stroking my ego. I start laughing. Are you joking? No. I stop laughing when he doesn't join me in my humor, even though it's pretty damn humorous. He burns holes through me with his stunning eyes. I hold the power over your body, Ava. When those beautiful eyes are full of lust for me, that's when I hold the power. He releases my cheeks and skates his palms up the insides of my thighs. I tense, my mouth parting, my hands shooting up to clench his suit jacket with my fists. He smiles, leaning in and placing his lips gently on mine. See? He whispers, removing his hands from my thighs and then prying my grip from his chest. The power's yours again. I study him on a half-smile, completely getting it. That's why you fuck me senseless, give me the countdown, and demand I kiss you when I'm mad. He smiles. Watch your mouth. You've completely exposed yourself. I'm never going to let you touch me again. He laughs really hard. His chest expands, and he throws his head back. I think I already knew that. That's why I run at the start of the countdown. I know what he's capable of when he gets his hands on me. His head comes back down, his eyes scanning my face. Well, Mr. Ward, given how much sex we have, I'd say you're the majority shareholder of power in this relationship. I grin when he starts with the laughing again. It's a wonderful sight, the faint lines fanning his greens, making his eyes sparkle. Baby, we will never have enough sex. That makes you a very powerful man, then. Oh, Jesus, Ava. He sweeps my hair away from my face and cups my cheeks. I love you so fucking much. Kiss me. Feeling weak? He leans in. I am. His lips brush gently over mine, and I indulge him, handing him the control he craves, letting his tongue saturate my senses as he hums into my mouth and draws all of the power from me. Better? I ask around his lips. Much. Come on, lady. We have a date. He places me on my feet before turning the music off and scooping my clutch from the floor. Ready? Oh, let me show you the message. I take my bag and retrieve my phone. I had almost forgotten about that. What message? He asks on a frown. He clearly has two. The one sent from John's phone. I scroll through my phone, my heart beating nervously. This is it. This is the moment I get this off my chest. I have it plain and clear, so he can't possibly argue with it. John wouldn't do this. There. I hold my phone up to him and he takes it. His frown line creeps across his brow as he reads the message, a thoughtful look plaguing his expression. His eyes flick to mine and back to the screen. He's really thinking about this. After what seems like forever, with me tense and him staring at the screen, he starts nodding mildly. I'll be dealing with this. He tosses my phone on the counter. He doesn't look very happy at all. I sag a little in relief. I think I almost expected him to defend her, or say that it must have been someone else. But who else would do that? I don't need to say anything more. He knows, and I'm so relieved. My phone starts singing, and I scoop it up from the counter. Seeing Ruth Quinn's name flashing up on the screen, I let out a tired sigh and reject the call. She'll soon call the office and find out that I'm off work today. Who's that? A new client. A pain in the arse new client. He takes my phone and slides it back on the worktop, then pulls me into his chest. No work today. Are you ready for our date? I nod into his chest. Yes. His lips press into the top of my head, and he releases me, holding his arm out in a very gentlemanly manner. I smile, thread my arm through his, and let him lead me out of the penthouse to the elevator. We reflect in all of the mirrors around us. Everywhere I look, I can see him in all of his beauty, and me with my hand slipped under his suit jacket, unwilling to let him go. He glances down at me out of the corner of his eye. I should make you give me an apology, fuck, here and now, he says in a low, quiet voice. Do I owe you an apology? You do. He returns his eyes forward, and I find them in the reflection of the doors. What for? I quickly scan my mind for anything he might be referring to, and I come up with, in Jesse's world, way too much for him to hold against me. But this morning, I've been compliant, and he has been quite reasonable. You owe me an apology for making me wait too damn long for you. His face is completely straight, and his words full of meaning. I smile and tuck myself into his side. I've not really had to wait very long for him at all, two crappy relationships aside. While he was battling numerous demons, I was blissfully unaware and going through the motions of any normal young woman. It's a strange thought. The elevator door opens, and his arm drapes gently around my shoulder as we walk through the foyer of Luso. Clive. Jesse nods at the concierge, who nods brusquely in return before he continues with something that has his attention on his desk. We emerge into the cool evening air, and Jesse bleeps the DBS. Oh, Kate rang. You should probably call her back. You answered my phone again? I ask, but he just shrugs off my accusation. I sigh and open my bag to retrieve my phone, but after a little rummage, I discover no phone. Jesse, I've left my phone in the tower. He makes a long, exaggerated point of demonstrating the inconvenience I'm causing. Here. He passes the keys. Hurry up or we'll be late for dinner. I'll be quick. I race off, back into the foyer of Luso, throw a frown at Clive, who still ignores me, and press the code for the elevator. Why is it not on the ground floor still? I wait impatiently for it to return to base, then jump in. I exit before the doors have completely opened, and shove the key in the door, leaving it in the lock as I run into the kitchen. But I skid to a halt on a shocked gasp when I see two people sitting on bar stools, both looking really very menacing. Chapter 34. What? How? When? I stammer and stutter all over the place. Where did they come from? Hello, Mum says, short and sharp. My dad just sits there shaking his head. I can't work out if she's mad or not. I want to dive on them both and squeeze the life out of them. I've not seen them for weeks. And here they are. But I can't gauge their moods. How did you get in here? I managed to get a full sentence out. Oh, didn't you know? Your father is a retired cat burglar. Mum's perfectly threaded eyebrow raises at me, and Dad sits there looking all disapproving and moody. Mum, I frown. She sighs and stands. Ava O'Shea, get your backside over here and give your mother a hug. She holds her arms out to me. I burst into tears. I knew she would do that, my dad grumbles. Bloody women. Shut up, Joseph. She gestures with her arms again, and I walk straight into them, sobbing like a child and wincing slightly as she rubs my back warmly. Oh, Ava, what are you crying for? Stop it. You're setting me off. I'm so pleased to see you. I blubber into my mum's grey blazer and hear my father's huffing his displeasure at the two women in his life bawling and snivelling. He's never been one for showing his emotions, finding any sort of affection highly uncomfortable. Ava, you couldn't avoid us forever, even if we are miles away. Let me look at you. She pulls me away from her body and wipes my tears away. There is no denying I'm my mother's daughter. Her eyes mirror mine, all big and chocolatey, and her hair, which matches mine in colour, is cut into a short, sweeping style. She looks good for 47. Really good. You have sent me and your dad wild with worry these last few weeks. I'm sorry. I've had a crazy few weeks. I try and sort myself out. My mascara is probably running down my cheeks, and I seriously need to blow my nose. Hold up. I look at my mum and then my dad, who shrugs his big shoulders on a grunt. How did you really get in? I've been so blindsided with shock and emotion, I've forgotten that we're standing in Jesse's £10 million penthouse. I invited them. I swing around and find Jesse standing in the archway entrance with his hands resting loosely in his trouser pockets. You never said, I splutter. I'm confused. I didn't want to row over it. He shrugs. They're here now. I look at my mother, who is smiling brightly, and I'm mortified to see that she's obviously affected by Jesse. I don't know why I'm mortified. He draws the same reaction from all women, and I need to remember that my mother is nearer to Jesse's age than I am. Mum, Dad, this is Jesse. I gesture between them. Jesse, this is my mum and dad, Elizabeth and Joseph. I hadn't planned for it to be like this. I hadn't planned it at all, actually. We've met, Jesse says. My eyes fly to his. What? We've met, he repeats himself, which is not necessary because I heard the first time. His lips are twitching. Okay, I'm thoroughly confused. He sighs and walks toward us until he's standing in front of me, a bit close for comfort, considering my parents are just there, and this is all a bit of a shock for them, and for me. I didn't go for a run this morning, he says. You didn't? I frown. You had your running kit on. He laughs lightly. I know. It's not what I would have chosen to wear to meet your parents, but desperate times. He shrugs. You're making up for it now, Jesse. My mum pats his suit-clad arm, and my mouth drops open. What the fuck is going on here? I want to swear my head off, but my mum hates swearing just as much as Jesse. I'm sorry, I reach up and rub my temples. I'm confused. Sit. Jesse takes my arm and leads me over to a stool, taking a seat next to me. Mum resumes position next to Dad. I spoke to your mum late last night. She was understandably worried about you and asked me lots of questions. He raises his brow at my mum, who laughs lightly. Nosy, isn't she? Dad tuts, and Mum slaps his shoulder. She's my little girl, Joseph. Anyway, Jesse continues, I thought it was best for them to come and see for themselves that I'm not a raving loon keeping you captive in our tower. So here they are. Here we are, Mum sings. She clearly has no issues with a stunning man who is gently stroking my hand. I try and recover from the shock. So you met them this morning? Why? I felt I needed to explain myself, Jesse says. I look at him and could weep. I can't believe he's done this. Ava, neither of us anticipated each other, and for very different reasons. I know your parents' opinion means a lot to you, and as it means so much to you, it means a lot to me, too. My priority is you. You're all that matters to me. I love you. I hear my mum hit the deck in her mental faint, and my dad, although emotionally detached, gives an approving nod. All any father wants is for his daughter to be taken care of. Dad reaches over and puts his hand out to Jessie. I believe you'll do good. Jessie accepts my dad's offering. It's my full-time job. Jessie smiles. Mum swoons. And I laugh. Good God! Jessie raises a sardonic eyebrow at me. He knows what I'm thinking. Am I Mum and Dad aware of how serious he is when he says that? I have to commend Jessie on his speech, though. He's won them over fair and square, and I do feel like I've had a huge burden lifted from my shoulders. But I'm conscious that they don't know Jesse's business nature and what he did when he drank, or about the punishment he subjected himself to because he thought he had failed me, because he thought he deserves retribution, or the fact that I could be pregnant. I could go on forever. That's a whole other weight on my shoulders. Did he explain to them about the drinking? After Matt's call to them, they must be wondering. Mum gets down from her stool and makes her way around the island, her eyes all glazed. Come here, you silly sod. She pulls me down from the stool and throws her arms around me. I hiss a few times, clenching my eyes shut. You've got yourself in a right pickle. You've fallen in love, Ava. You should have told me. Oh, I have got myself in a pickle, but for a whole lot more reasons than she knows. Right. Are we eating or what? And I'm gagging for a pint. My dad drags me back to the here and now. Mum releases me and straightens herself out. Do you mind if I use your bathroom, Jessie? She asks. Sure. Do a right and an immediate right again. By the gym. Knock yourself out. Pardon? Mum blurts. I laugh. I'm sorry. He smiles, flicking his eyes to me, then back to my mum. Go for it. Like I said, right and right again. By the gym. Oh, thank you. Mum gives me a oh the gym look and grabs her purse from the worktop, leaving me, Jessie, and my dad to make small talk. So, what do you drive? Dad starts and I groan. Dad's passion for big, expensive cars is going to be fed good and proper now. Jessie pulls me back onto the stool. A DBS. Aston Martin. That's it. Nice. Dad nods and does a rubbish job of showing disinterest. And the hotel is in the Surrey Hills. Jessie must feel me go rigid because he squeezes me slightly. It is. I'll show you one day, perhaps on your next visit. Sure. Elizabeth loves anything luxury. Dad rolls his eyes. My mum is certainly high maintenance. It's a nice place you have here. Dad looks around the kitchen and then back at Jessie. Thank you. But your daughter is responsible for that. He starts curling a lock of my hair around his finger. I just bought the place. So, this is the big project that stole all of your time? Dad muses. You did a good job. Thanks, Dad. I'm more than relieved when I hear the front doorbell. Dad and small talk are not a match well made. Do you want to get that? Jessie pats my bum and I stand. Who is it? I don't know. Go and see. He pushes me away, and I leave Dad and Jessie to continue small talk as I make my way to the front door. No one can come up without knowing the code, so it has to be Clive. I swing it open and find Dan, Kate, and Sam all standing in the penthouse foyer, and my first thought is, Dan and Kate within a mile of each other. Bad news. But then Dan steps forward with a big smile on his face, and I all but throw myself on him, forgetting all back pain and awkward tension between him and my best friend. "What are you doing here?" I squeeze him to me, and he laughs. "I'm doing as I'm told." He fights me off and holds me back. "You look good," he says on a bright smile. "Where's this new bloke I need to give him the if you hurt her speech to?" A wave of fear flies through me at the thought of Jesse accepting any such speech. "In the kitchen. But you don't need to do that." He eyes me warily. "It's my job," he states firmly, and then looks past me into the penthouse. "Fucking hell," he whispers as he cops a load of the space. He drops me and saunters off. Kate steps forward with a clear look of trepidation on her pale face. She wraps her arms around me. "This has to be the most awkward situation I've ever put myself in," she whispers in my ear. "Fucking hideous." I laugh. "He's up on your grip." I shrug her slightly. "Does Sam know?" I whisper back. "Sorry, and no, he's fucking oblivious."
"Hey, where's the love?"
Sam removes Kate and throws his arms around me gently.
"You are one mad woman," he says quietly.
"I know."
"Don't do that again. Now where's my man?"
"Kitchen." He drops me and heads for the kitchen. I look at Kate, and she shakes her head.
"If I could have got out of this, I would have." She lets out a stressed breath.
"Come on." She takes my hand, and we go back to the kitchen, finding Jesse making the introductions. Dan's cautious eyes flick between Jesse and Sam for a whole lot of different reasons. Kathy appears from nowhere, with Luigi and three waiters, and Jesse leaves the kitchen island chatter to have a word. I watch as he lets Kathy kiss his cheek, shakes Luigi's hand, and then points around the kitchen and through to the terrace. Kathy shoos him away and gives me a happy wave.
"What's happening?"
I ask him when he joins me back by the island.
"We're having dinner."
"Here?"
"Yes. I arranged for Luigi to come in and do the honors. We'll eat on the terrace. It's a nice evening."
He places me in front of himself and brushes my hair away from my face.
"I can't believe you did this."
He cocks his head to the side.
"Whatever it takes, you know this."
My hands slide up his jacket sleeves to rest on his biceps.
"You might get the loving brother speech," I smile apologetically.
"Do you think you could humor him?" His lips press into a straight line.
"You mean another man telling me how to look after you?" "I don't think so."
My shoulders sag slightly.
"Whatever it takes," I whisper his words.
I can't even begin to imagine how much it pained him to have to talk to my parents. It goes against all of his natural instincts. He rests his finger under my chin and drops a light kiss on the corner of my mouth.
"Whatever it takes," he confirms. "Come on."
He proceeds to direct everyone out of the kitchen and onto the terrace, where I find everything has been set for a meal. The outside dining table has been superbly laid. The patio heaters have been lit to take the edge off the cool evening air, and bottles of wine and beer are chilling in the drinks fridge by the huge built-in barbecue. I throw Jesse a questioning look. How did he manage all of this? He smiles and gives me a gesture of sleep. While I was snoozing most of the day, he was busy meeting my parents and preparing all of this. I'm still in shock. I'm in a half-trance, as the people I love the most in the world converse, chat, laugh, and drink at the table, while Luigi and his staff prepare and serve a luscious Italian feast. Jesse keeps his hand firmly on my knee, choosing to eat one-handed,
squeezing every so often, particularly harder when Dan commences his older brother speech. I watch Jesse struggle to remain polite, and when my mother catches the line of conversation, I'm immensely grateful for her intervention. She admonishes Dan and smiles sweetly at Jesse, before picking up her conversation with Kate, who has eased up slightly, although you can't ignore the tension that is bristling between her and Dan. Sam, however, is completely unaware and doing a good job of making my dad laugh hard with God only knows what stories. Kate's not her normal self, Jesse observes quietly as he tops up my water glass. She and Dan have a bit of a history, I reply. It's complicated. Jesse's eyebrows rise in surprise. I see. Did you enjoy your pasta? It was lovely. I rest my hand over his on my knee. Thank you. You are more than welcome, he winks. Nothing stands in the way now, does it? No. The path is clear. I smile, and then melt, when he gives me his smile, the one reserved only for me, his eyes twinkling in contentment. I'm glad you said that. He stands, halting all conversation at the table, all attention turning to him. He pulls my chair out. Up you get. I stand on a frown. Excuse us for a few minutes, he says to our silent guests, before leading me away by my hand. Where are we going? I ask his back. He halts, turns, and drops to his knee in front of me, only a few feet away from the table. I hear my mum's sharp intake of breath, and mine that follows shortly after. I look down at him, with a gaping mouth and wide eyes, as he takes my hand and looks up at me with crystal-clear greens. Shall we try this the traditional way? He asks quietly. I start to physically shake. Oh, God! I breathe through the melon-sized lump in my throat. I turn slowly and drink in the table and the occupants, all watching intently. My mum has her hand over her mouth, and my dad has a small smile on his lips. Dan is expressionless, and Kate and Sam are relaxed in their chairs with matching grins. My heart commences to gallop in my chest as I return my body to face Jesse, my glazed eyes to his. He's only just met my parents. He can't land this on me, not in front of them. I've trampled them all, his eyes twinkle. Delicately-ish. I've even asked your father. The corner of his mouth lifts into a half-smile, and a small sob escapes my lips. You must know how hard that was for me. He drops my hand and glides his palms around the backs of my legs to pull me closer, prompting my hands to rest on his shoulders. Anything it takes, Ava, he whispers. My hands drift up to find the back of his head, and my fingers thread through his dark blonde hair as he looks up at me. Marry me, baby. You're crazy mad, I sob, bending to kiss him, my hands moving to the side of his face. You crazy, crazy man! Will I be crazy mad and married? He asks into my mouth. Please tell me I'll be crazy mad and married to you. His hands pull me down to my knees, and he holds my shoulders firmly, his eyes swimming as he searches my face. It's all about you, and it always will be. For the rest of my life, it's only you. I love you beyond crazy. Marry me, Ava. I fall forward onto his chest in a sobbing mess and hear my mum burst into tears. Is that a yes? Yes. I hear his sharp intake of breath. I can't breathe, he murmurs, falling back, taking me with him so we're sprawled on the terrace floor. He takes my mouth, kissing me adoringly. Once again,
My challenging, neurotic ex-playboy will have me wherever and whenever he pleases. And he's completely unashamed of it. I love you so much.
He pulls my hand up and slips my ring back onto my finger before dropping a kiss next to it and engulfing me in his body again, squeezing me hard.
I love you too, I whisper in his ear. I'm so glad. You're the best birthday present I've ever had.
What? I pull up and gaze down at him through my glazed eyes. He smiles, almost embarrassed.
It's your birthday?
It is.
He starts nibbling his lip.
Today?
Yes.
He nods as he answers.
I narrow playful eyes on him.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
I break out in a full beam.
Happy birthday.
He blesses me with his smile, reserved only for me, and pulls me back down to his chest, sinking his nose straight into my neck.
I melt into him. I love this man, in all of his perfection and in all of his challenging, unreasonable ways. He took me hard and fast. He made me fall in love with him. He made me need him. He was so unexpected, so passionate, and so absolutely irresistible. And now he is wholly mine, and I am undeniably his. I finally understand him. I finally got beneath this man.
Bonus scene. Jesse's POV for Beneath This Man. The whipping.
I can't feel the pain of the whip. There's no stinging or stabbing as the leather connects with my back. The only pain I feel is in my heart. It's the crippling agony of failure. Failure to protect the only thing in my life of value. Drink would have numbed this torture. But it also would have caused more pain, more failure. I can barely breathe through my guilt. I can't bring myself to face up to my wrongs. There have been so many, and all are potential triggers to drive my beautiful girl away. I know Sarah is enjoying this. I saw the delighted sparkle in her sick eyes when she walked in on me with a bottle of vodka hovering at my lips. I could smell the ignorance and escape that bottle would provide, but I could also smell the remorse that would follow. Punish myself. That's my only option. God knows I've put Ava through enough, and there's more for her to know. That is why I found it so easy to drop the bottle, remove my t-shirt, and fall to my knees. It gives me the opportunity to pray, too. Even in my trance-like state, I know this will never be enough, but I'm at a loss. I don't know what to do to make this better, to make myself miraculously worthy of her love. Maybe I'm beyond hope. Maybe I'll always fuck up everything good that comes into my life. Maybe this is my penance, God giving me a brief perception of how my life could be, knowing I'll screw it up. Leaving me no more hollow and lost than before. Or maybe one day, I might get something in my life right. I think I can hear voices. Or am I dreaming? My back bows sharply, my head flying back, as the leather meets my flesh again. I've lost the ability to speak, to make any noise, in fact. So what's that sound? It only takes me a split second to realize. It's loud. It's frightened.
It's my angel. My head whips up, finding Ava in a physical struggle with John. She's screaming, yelling, thumping and hitting him. Ava? I just about form the single word that usually fills my heart with happiness. Just the sound of her name takes me away from all pain. But not now. She stills at the low husk of my voice, her face turning toward me. The distress and pain etched all over her beautiful features cripples me. She's here. How? She cries out to me, kicking my dead muscles into action. My need to get to her is desperate, but nothing is working. My legs are like jelly, my mind still partly fogged. She looks me all over before her petite body folds in on itself, and she falls to the floor at John's feet. Ava? I finally convince my fucking legs to play ball and get me into a standing position. Fuck, I feel more pissed than any amount of vodka could achieve. I'm hoping this is all a bad dream. But when I shake my head and gain something near to full focus, my heart slows a little. She's sobbing, looking at me with nothing but pure agony gushing from those stunning eyes. Jesus, no! I start to rush over, but something holds me back. It takes a few desperate moments to realize what. Get the fuck off me! I practically throw Sarah away and hurry to my girl. Ava, baby, what are you doing here? I join her on the floor, feeling her face out so I can see those eyes. When I find them, I hate what I'm confronted with. More pain. It's intensifying the closer I get, the more I look. She's pushing me away, making me drop her from my hold. Panic sets in. Ava, please. John gets shoved from her path, and she disappears through the door. My strength seems to return at the sight of her running away from me again. I push myself to my feet. Fuck! John flicks a concerned face in my direction, weighing up my next move. He knows better than to ask. He takes his big body quickly down the corridor and I follow. I can't feel my legs, but they're moving fast. I watch her back disappear into the ladies' bathroom, and I steam in after her, John in tow. The sound that greets me punches a hole through my gut. She's being sick. Ava! I should be gently coaxing her from the cubicle, but my fear is growing by the second. I bang. Ava! Open the door! I hear shifting, but the door doesn't open. Please! I let my head meet the door, my palms and chest pressed into the wood, as if this will make me a little bit closer to her. Ava, please, open the door. Nothing. Who let her in? I don't mean to punch the door in anger. Fuck! Who the fucking hell let her in?
Jesse, I didn't let her in. I would never have let her in.
John's big palm meets my shoulder, rubbing soothing circles into a piece of flesh that isn't welted. I don't need to look at his face to know he's being up front. We both look toward the door when Kate flies in, her pretty face looking back and forth between us.
What's going on? Fuck, Jesse! What the hell has happened to your back?
Nothing. Fuck. I don't want the whole fucking world getting their fill of me and my fuck-ups.
Don't fucking talk to me like that. Where's Ava? What the hell is going on? Ava?
I flinch at her returned harshness, but I'm in no position to call her out on it. I deserve so much more than a tongue-lashing from Ava's best friend. I join her at the door.
She's in there. She won't come out. Ava? Please, Kate, get her out.
I bang the door again for no purpose at all. She's not coming out while I'm here. I begrudgingly know that.
Hey, tell me why she's locked in there, and why you're out here bleeding all over the place.
Ava's spunky friend hits me with a question I can't avoid. Ava walked in on something she shouldn't have seen. I'm vague, and Kate's raised brow confirms she's already aware of this. She's freaked out. I need to see her. My panic is increasing with every second that I can't get to her.
If you fucked her over, Jesse, she shouts. Ava?
No, it's not like that. My hand finds my hair and yanks. What the hell am I going to do?
Well, what's it like then? She's in there throwing up. Ava!
Kate starts a gentler tapping of the door.
Ava, come on! Open the door!
Ava! I yell. I'll bash the fucking door down if I have to.
Jesse, just go!
No!
She's obviously not going to come out with you here. Hey, big guy, get him out of here!
Jesse?
John starts pulling at my arm, his rumble softer than usual. But there's an edge of don't fuck with me in his tone. I might be a nasty fucker when I want to be, but I've seen John in action, and even though I know I'd give him a run for his money, I don't have the physical strength required. He'd flatten me with his thumb.
Let's get you sorted out, you stupid motherfucker.
Reluctantly, I let John lead me from the ladies, hoping my absence will encourage her out. I give Kate a pleading look, anything to make her see my turmoil. She'll never understand, but worst of all, I know Ava won't either. John practically drags me back to my office. I can feel the stares of the members, the men probably feeling smug seeing me in such a fucking state over a woman, probably thinking I've got what's been coming for many years. They're all right. The women are probably itching to comfort me, to take my mind off things. It'll never work. If I lose this woman, there's only one thing that'll take away the pain, and I'm more than prepared to do it. John lets loose once my office door is closed. I stand before his hulking frame and accept the rant I deserve. You stupid motherfucker! His loud boom knocks me back a step. Of all the fucked up sorry shit you do, this takes the fucking biscuit. He actually prods me in my shoulder, only lightly, but it's enough to make me stagger. I fucking told you! Stay away from the fucking drink! That didn't mean exchange it for the motherfucking whip! I glance up and watch as he removes his glasses, something only done when he wants someone to appreciate how fucked off he is. He's really fucked off. The shades get pointed at me. You are your own worst enemy, Jesse. I know, I agree quietly. I have no defense, nothing that'll make this acceptable. I'm going to try, though. Sam's head pops around the door, disturbing us. He smiles a nervous smile, apologizes for the interruption, and then quietly leaves again. John's attention is fired straight back at the sorry state of a man before him. Me. I told you to put your shirt on. I told you to go back to your girl and make things right, not wallow in your own self-fucking pity and join Sarah in her fucked-up sadistic shit. Be a fucking man, you stupid motherfucker. His arms fly up in frustration. And don't ever fucking question my security. How the fuck did she get in then? I shout, John's words reminding me of that little mystery.
I have no fucking idea, but I'm going to find out, you mark my word.
I'm about to yell some more until Sam's random visit to my office quickly registers in my screwed-up brain.
Fuck! I curse, barging past John and thundering down the corridor.
He was checking up on me, making sure I was out of the way, and he was doing it for a reason. Barreling back through the manor and in the door of the ladies, I halt when I find her standing and watching me, like she fully expected my arrival. There's a silent understanding that passes between our eyes as we study each other, Kate remaining silently to the side. Not prepared to be deterred, I walk forward and gather her in my arms, leaving the toilets fast. As I make my way to my office, Ava safely in my hold, I feel the most incredible amount of comfort. It's beyond what I could ever describe, and in this moment, I realize that every word that follows next has got to count. I'll make them count. My foot kicks the door of my office shut, and I settle on the sofa, keeping her close, trying hard not to flinch at the contact of leather on my raw flesh. The numbness is fading, being replaced with a sting to accompany my slowing heartbeat. My face instinctively finds the soft skin of her neck, the smell of her hair easing me a little. Her tears, however, don't. Please don't cry. It's killing me.
Why?
Her soft question reaches my ears, stupidly catching me off guard. It's a question I should have expected, and it's one that now needs answering. I promised you I wouldn't have a drink. My reply is feeble. Perhaps I'm building up the courage to give her the answers she needs and wants, tell her exactly what a fuck-up I really am. I mentally pray to God for forgiveness.
You wanted a drink?
I wanted to block it out.
Look at me,
she says harshly, but I can't face her. I can't confront the hurt I've caused.
Damn it, Jessie, look at me!
She's moving, attempting to drag me from my cowardly hiding place. My hiss of discomfort stops her tactics.
Three.
Her calm voice makes me go rigid. That and the one word that will lead to the answers much quicker than I'd like. I need to piece this together, make the most of the words I'm about to say. She's using my own manipulation against me.
Two.
What happens on zero? I already know the answer to this.
I leave.
I raise my head fast, the confirmation hurting deeper than I thought it could. Please don't. Her face drops, all resentment seeming to fall away at my words. I didn't intend to make her feel guilty. She moves to sit astride me, her arms carefully encasing me.
Tell me what you were blocking out.
Hurting you?
I don't understand. I would rather you had a drink.
You wouldn't. The small, ironic laugh isn't stoppable. She really has no idea. She sits back, determined to meet my eyes. I could never deny her.
I would rather face you with half a vodka distillery inside you than see what I just saw.
My head hangs. Trust me, Ava. You wouldn't.
Trust you? Jessie, I feel sick with betrayal.
Suddenly she's removing herself from my body, and the loss of her soft curves against my hard muscle is unbearable. I try to reclaim her but get shrugged off. It slices my soul.
I'm not leaving,
she spits, making me retract my hands in shock. She starts a dogged march around my office, the usual fond sight of her, gently tapping her front tooth in thought, doing nothing to relax me. My unease doesn't improve when she lowers herself on the opposite sofa, making a point of keeping out of my reach. I'm slowly forming words in my head, words to explain or make her feel better, but they're not in order yet. I'm not sure where to begin. I can do nothing more than watch as she sighs and starts rubbing comforting circles into her temples. I want to do that. I want to do anything I can to make her feel better.
Is there anything else I need to know?
She asks, watching closely for my reaction to her unexpected question. I try to hide my tensing body. Like what? The look of disgust on her face is warranted.
I don't know. You tell me.
Her arms catapult to the ceiling.
Why would I prefer this to drunken Jessie?
Gritting my teeth, I move forward, trying to close the space between us. My elbows hit my knees and I mimic Ava's attempt to soothe the brain ache by rubbing circles in my temples too. Drink and sex go hand in hand for me. I say the words that'll commence the unraveling of my secrets.
What does that mean?
Ava, I inherited the manor when I was 21. Can you imagine a young lad with this place and a whole lot of women ready and willing? I've never felt so remorseful for my selfish ways.
You mean the dabbling?
Her voice is quiet and cautious. She's already beginning to work this out. Yes, the dabbling, but it's all behind me. I move farther forward. Now it's all about you. I need her to understand this. It might make the rest easier for her to come to terms with.
You drank and dabbled?
Yes, like I said, drink and sex go hand in hand. Please, come here. I'm ignored.
So you didn't have a drink because you would have wanted to have sex?
I don't trust myself with alcohol, Ava.
Because you think you will jump the nearest woman?
Another ironic laugh falls unwittingly from my lips. I don't think so. I couldn't do that to you. I should stab myself for my nerve and save her the trouble of dealing with this fucked-up asshole any longer. Her eyebrows shoot up.
You don't think so?
It's not a risk I'm willing to take, Ava. Not anymore, I add silently to myself. I drink too much, lose reason, and women throw themselves at me willingly. You've seen it.
You didn't look very capable of anything last Friday.
She shouts incredulously. Yeah, that's not my normal level of intemperance, Ava. I was on a mind-numbing mission. Shit, how the fuck am I going to do this?
So you usually maintain a steady level of drinking and then have lots of sex with lots of willing women? You've never had a drink when you've slept with me.
I can't do this without contact. So I shove the table aside that's blocking my access, and fall to my knees before her. No, Ava, I have never been under the influence of alcohol when I've had you. I don't need it. Alcohol blocked things out for me, made me forget how hollow my life was. I didn't give a fuck about any of the women I slept with, not one. And then you fell into my life, and things changed completely. You brought me back to life, Ava. I never want to touch the drink, because if I start, I might not stop, and I never want to miss a moment with you. I'm a bastard. A desperate, hopeless bastard. I can see the tears forming in her browns. I'm not sure how this can get any worse.
Have you had sleepy sex with anyone else?
I do a shit job of hiding my exasperation at her silly question, sighing loudly.
No. What about a sense fuck?
She looks fierce. Ava, no. I've never cared about anyone else enough to need or want to fuck any sense into them. I find her legs and squeeze some reassurance into them. I don't expect it to work, but I'm willing to try anything. Only you. My hands are pushed aside, and she's on her feet.
So on Thursday, in your office, are you telling me that if you had drunk the vodka, I would have found you nailing Sarah on your desk, not just looking cozy with her on your desk?
What? Sarah? Is she insane?
I jump up and stalk over to her, taking a firm hold of her small body.
No, don't be stupid.
I don't think I'm being stupid. It's bad enough worrying about you drinking. I don't know if I can cope with the additional worry of you being drunk and wanting to fuck other women.
She's losing control, her scathing words making me jump back in shock, even though I have no right to. I also have no right to reprimand her on her foul language, but I still do. Will you watch your fucking mouth? It doesn't make me want to fuck other women. It just makes me want to fuck.
So I had better ensure that I'm with you when you have a drink then, hadn't I?
Oh, Jesus, yes, she had. But it's too late already. I won't be having a drink. When will you listen to me, woman? I'm losing control now, too. The plan to try and make these words count falling away fast. I don't need drink. I fear I might tighten my grip too hard, so I release her, removing myself from her space and taking a march across my office to try and gather some calming thoughts. It's no good. Nothing will work. I jab my finger in her face. I need you. It's quickly brushed aside.
You need me to replace drink and screwing.
Where the hell did she get that from? I need her to breathe. It doesn't get any simpler than that.
You manipulate me.
I don't manipulate you, I defend, shocked. But I know I really do. Constant contact, making unreasonable demands, and blowing her mind with our joined bodies are all ways for me to keep her. But it's to keep her safe, too.
Yes, you do. With sex. Sense-fucking, reminder-fucking, it's all manipulation. I need you, and you use it against me.
No, I yell, thrashing out and sending the poison that has brought me to this hideous place in my life crashing to my office floor. The loud smashing of bottles and glasses recedes, and I find myself holding her arms firmly again. I need you to need me, Ava. It doesn't get any simpler than that. How many times have I got to tell you? As long as you need me, I look after myself. Simple.
How is having yourself whipped, looking after yourself? She screams.
My hair takes a severe punishing when I yank at it violently.
I don't fucking know.
I do. Desperation, hopelessness, desolation, fear. There are four, and I'm not finished yet.
I do need you, but not like this.
Her defeatism worries me further, so I take her hands gently. Look at me. Her head falls and her eyes meet mine. Tell me, how do I make you feel? I know how you make me feel. Yes, I've had lots of women. But it was all just sex, mindless sex, no feelings. Ava, I need you.
How can you need me if I make you do this to yourself? You're more self-destructive now than you were before me. I've made you need alcohol, not want it. I've made you into an unreasonable, crazy man, and I'm certainly not stable anymore. Don't you see what we're doing to each other?
Her words slice me, even though the first part of that statement is probably true. The last part, however, isn't. We're loving each other. That's what we're doing. Everything I do is because I love her. Ava.
And for the record, I hate the fact that you've slept around.
I take a deep breath, silently agreeing with her, but then she gasps and the horror-filled sound pumps fear directly into my veins. When you disappeared for 4 days, her words catch in her throat. Trepidation splashed all over her beautiful face. My eyes open farther, like I need her to see my remorse. My time is up. They meant nothing. I love you. I need you. Oh, God! She collapses in front of me and starts a pain-filled cry. I've never felt more shitty, more unworthy, more desperate.
You were fucking other women!
I fall to my knees, taking a firm but gentle hold, shaking her a little for what purpose I don't know. Ava, listen to me. They meant nothing. I was falling in love with you. I knew I would hurt you. I didn't want to hurt you.
You said you couldn't do it to me. You forgot to add again.
You should have said you couldn't do it to me again. I didn't want to hurt you.
So to remedy that, you fucked other women.
Her reasonable question leaves me without an answer. I ask myself the same thing every day, 10 times a day.
How many?
I wince. Ava, please don't. I hate myself.
I hate you too. How could you?
Ava, why are you not listening to me?
I am. I don't like what I'm hearing.
She's moving, taking herself away. I make a panicked grab for her hips, placing my head on her stomach, my emotions completely taking over. My body starts to jerk.
I'm sorry. I love you. Please, I beg you, don't leave me. Marry me.
What? Her tone is shocked, disgusted. Everything I don't want it to be.
I can't marry someone who I don't understand.
And those words finish me off, making me crumble to the floor before her.
I thought I was working you out.
Her voice is trembling.
You've destroyed me again, Jesse.
Ava, please. I was a mess. I lost control. I thought I could fight you out of my head. I'm spitting words, frantic and flooded with panic.
By getting pissed and fucking other women.
I didn't know what to do. I'm panicked, but it's all I have. The overwhelming anxiety, fear, and dread at her being hurt hasn't improved. It never will. Neither will my dread of losing her. But my ability to run away from pure, raw, intense love has. My excuses for leaving her for those 4 days will never be good enough. Fear in a man like me is laughable, but that is what this woman reduces me to. A wreck, a tragic excuse of a man. I really don't deserve the love this woman throws at me, but I'm far too selfish to give it up easily.
You could have talked to me,
she says. Ava, you would have run away from me again.
All of the apologies you've been giving me were because your conscience was eating away at you. It wasn't because you were drunk, or because of the manner. It's because you screwed around on me. You said you hadn't dabbled since way before me. You've lied to me. Every time I think we've made progress, more bombshells. I can't cope with this anymore. I don't know who you are, Jesse.
Ava, you do know me. I fucked up. I've really fucked up. But no one knows me better than you. No one.
Sarah might do. She seems to know you very well.
Her tone is flat, almost resentful.
Why?
My body gives, my ass hitting my heels. I've let you down. I wanted a drink, but I promised you I wouldn't, and I know what's likely to happen if I do. So you had yourself whipped?
Yes.
I don't understand.
I don't show her the shame in my eyes. I don't need to. Ava, you know I've led a colorful life. I've broken marriages, treated women like objects, and taken what's not mine. I've damaged people, and I feel like all of this is my penance. I've found my little piece of heaven, and I feel like everyone is going out of their way to take it away from me. You are the only one who's going to fuck this up. Just you. You drinking, you being a control freak, you fucking other women, you. I could have stopped it all. I can't believe I've got you. I'm terrified you're going to be taken away from me. So you ask a woman I despise, a woman who wants to take you away from me, to whip you?
Sarah doesn't want to take me away from you. I frown. But obviously Ava disagrees, judging by the look of total shock on her face. And I know she's probably right. I could ignore it before Ava crashed into my life, but not now.
Yes, Jesse, she does. You doing this to yourself is agony for me. You are punishing me, not you. I love you, despite all of the shit you keep landing on me. But I can't watch you do this to yourself.
Don't leave me. My voice has taken on an unwarranted, demanding tone, and I grab her hands. I'll die before I'm without you, Ava.
Don't say that. That's crazy talk.
Can't she see? I pull her to her knees. It's not crazy. That nightmare I had when you were gone, just like that, gone, it gave me a clue of what it would be like without you. The reminder brings all of the tormenting images back. Blackness, emptiness, indescribable pain. Ava, it killed me. If I leave, it would be because I can't watch you hurt yourself. I can't watch you torture yourself anymore.
You could never understand how much I love you. I clasp her face, but she fights me off again.
Let me touch you.
The panic reignites, the visions of my nightmare now too near real.
I do understand, Jesse, because I feel the same.
Her shout stops me from grappling to get her back in my arms.
How can she feel like this?
Even though you fucked me over completely, I still fucking love you. And I fucking hate myself for it. So don't you dare tell me I don't understand.
It's not possible. Damn it. She has no fucking idea.
Anger surges through me at the very claim, and I reach forward, yanking her to me on a sharp intake of breath.
It's just not fucking possible.
She doesn't fight me off this time. She's given in, letting me feel and hold her for a short while before she gently breaks away from me.
I'm going to get something to clean you up with.
I'm not prepared to let her go. But she finds an incredible strength from somewhere, managing to shrug me off.
Jesse, I need to clean you up.
Don't walk away from me.
I said I would never leave you. I meant it.
She walks out on me, leaving me on my knees and ready to pray some more. This is far from done, and despite her words, I'm not convinced she could possibly feel as strongly for me as I do for her. How could she? And there is nothing she can do to prove it.
Acknowledgements. The This Man roller coaster just gets faster and faster, with more loop-the-loops and twists and turns. I never want to get off. As always, my gratitude to every single person who has joined me along the way is immeasurable. I continue to bask nicely on Central Jesse Cloud 9. Jody, XXX.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of Beneath This Man, written by Jody Ellen Malpas, read by Adita Brichter, produced and directed by Dennis Keough, audio editing by Jennifer Nix and Fred Koch, mixing and mastering by Jeremy Wesley, production supervised by Elise Green. Beneath This Man is also available in print and digital formats from Forever, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2013 by Jody Ellen Malpas. Audio production copyright 2013, Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher is unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons living or dead, events or locales, is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.